Hi everyone, Joel and Andy at Codebreak with another episode of Stay Hungry. Today we're going to be talking about what heavy metal can teach us about marketing. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm okay now.
Now?
I've had my first coffee that I had dentist this morning. So when I said, oh, I can't wait for my first coffee, she goes, oh, we better leave it a while. I was like, oh, what do you mean? She goes, well, you just had your teeth scaled and polished. So if you have coffee straight away, you could straight away stay there. Oh, right. So I've waited till 12 o'clock. It's my first coffee day and it's bloody lovely. So I'm tip top. How are you?
It's a posh dentist when you get a scale and polish, isn't it?
Oh, God, here we go. Your dentist just like hacks away with an axe or something.
No, I just, I had a bit of a realisation the other day. This is a weird one.
Is it about heavy metal and marketing?
No, we'll get there. I've got some notes, don't worry.
Notes? Bloody arse first.
Private dentistry in general.
So I got a shift. I did lots of deadlifts on Saturday and then we did 12K run yesterday.
Don't fucking talk to me about deadlifts.
Arse is killing me.
Oh, well, as long as you recover in a couple of days, you're all right. If you're still struggling 5 weeks later, something's gone wrong.
I can't get comfy.
Anyway, my point being, I found out that most private dental procedures actually cost less than NHS dental procedures, which blew my mind.
You don't go to a private dentist, do you?
No, I've registered with NHS dentists.
I knew you wouldn't. On principle?
Well, no, just because I thought it was cheaper, to be honest. And it turns out it's not.
What do you mean cheap? You don't have to pay for an NHS dentist, do you?
Yeah, you do. There's three scales of payment, so it's either £35, £50 or £200 every time.
Sorry, why would you choose £200 over £35?
So it depends what you have done. So if you need a fill-in, it's £50. If you need an extraction, it'll be £200 or whatever.
I thought it was free.
No, it's subsidised. It's not free.
Well. Learn something new every day. Hopefully it was about marketing, but it wasn't. It's about dentistry, but that's good.
That's why it blew my mind.
That's why we're so good at pub quizzes.
That's why it blew my mind, because I was like, well, generally when I go to the dentist, I just need a checkup, and it would actually cost me less to just have a checkup on a dental plan.
I'm about to say, most private dentists do some kind of dental plan, and it's just all, yeah.
Yeah.
Well. Anyway, heavy metal marketing.
We've
talked coffee, we've talked dentists, we've talked about my arse. We should probably talk about marketing.
Yeah. Probably.
That'd be good. Heavy metal. What is your definition of heavy metal, firstly?
My definition of heavy metal? Well, I guess to make it easy for the listener, heavy metal bands from the 80s would be kind of like Metallica, Motorhead, that kind of thing. Megadeth.
Slayer.
Very heavy metal.
Speaking of Slayer, there's a kid wearing a Slayer t-shirt in... Vampires versus the Bronx. If you haven't seen that new film on Netflix now, if you've got an hour 25 to kill, very amusing.
Okay.
Really cool. Like all these black kids and Hispanic kids in the neighborhood of the Bronx, white developers taking it over. But obviously it turns out they're not just developers, Joel. They're vampires. Fucking awesome.
So kind of like Batteries Not Included, but instead of...
I was going to say like Attack the Block, but not
I'm
setting,
a bit more old
not
school
setting
than that.
Croydon and aliens, I suppose. But really, really good. Really good.
I'm into that. That sounds good.
And one of the kids there was wearing a Slayer t-shirt. Obviously, that had good relevance because they were there slaying vampires.
So Slayer, Slipknot, Metallica, Iron Maiden, heavy metal bands. Bands that...
touched Dave Murray's foot, you know that?
Really?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Lead guitarist of Iron Maiden, for any uncivilised people listening. Went to see them. So they did, I think 1990, they did a tour of small venues just to basically get warmed up for a big venue tour. And I saw them at Victoria Hall Handley right at the front. And I got to touch Dave Murray's foot.
Did he kick you?
I don't think he even noticed. He was in the middle of a solo. He looked quite in the zone. But it was...
That's cool, though.
Awesome gig.
You won't see them better than that. If you like the music, obviously, if you look the spectacle, you could see a better spectacle, but...
They were just brilliant. So there I was, little Asian kid on the front row, listening to Iron Maiden, fighting against the stereotypes. It was... because we spent a lot of time at school arguing about... what's heavy metal? What's rock? What's soft rock? What's glam rock? Oh, God.
Yeah, so like Kiss.
Oh, God, yeah, totally. I mean, I can't even remember how many names and categories and subcategories of rock there were.
Yeah, our school was like that, where other schools I felt were arguing about pop music.
Because Poison would be like glam rock, I think.
Poison, Kiss, that's kind of glam rock. Motley Crue is glam rock.
Have you seen the film?
I've read the book as well. Do you think the film's bad too?
It seems my rock and roll past makes quite tame to read it, to be honest.
Yeah. So they certainly behaved very heavy metal, but I don't think they were a heavy metal band. It's like Bon Jovi back in the day behaved heavy metal, but they're not a heavy metal band.
Now he like owns a soup kitchen, feeds homeless people and stuff, like John Bon Jovi, and they're... Yeah, he's... Well, I suppose we all get older and more sensible, don't we? Right. Or a lot of us. But cool. Yeah, he's doing some great work over lockdown. There's a wonderful picture of him trending, literally washing up dishes in the back of the soup kitchen.
Yeah, I've read the interview about him. But to Corey Taylor, the lead singer of Slipknot.
He was on Radio 2 the other day.
He was on Sunday Brunch last week.
Sunday Brunch!
It's a heavy metal as it gets.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
Was he mixing up a nice souffle?
Because he cropped up on one of the podcasts I listened to, Off Menu, with Ed Gamble and James Acaster. And the reason being that Slipknot are Ed Gamble's all-time favourite band. So I was like, okay, there's a loose link. I'll allow it. Then 3 days later, he was on Sunday Brunch. And I was like, okay, he's clearly about to release a pop album. There's something's... So he is releasing a solo album that's a lot.
Because I heard this bloke speaking on the radio. And okay, to my shame, I imagined... when I first heard of Slipknot and saw them to be like just a bunch of lunatics. But then there was this well-spoken, very polite guy speaking on Radio 2. I'm like, oh, right. It's almost like, I mean, he started talking about art rock at one point and it was like, bloody hell.
Yeah, quite a well-rounded individual.
So are they like all sort of like, turns out to be like private school, Yale educated people who just thought, right, let's make some money.
No, I don't think so, but I do think they genuinely know their art. They knew their art form, and
didn't someone die from Slipknot?
Yeah, Paul. Can't remember his name, but yeah, Paul, the bassist, died. Yeah.
Died of.
Take his own life. I think it was accidental drug overdose, but I can't remember.
But they're still going, then, are they? Without.
Yeah, they've toured since. Him. They've toured since. So I saw them on the tour where that just happened, and so they wear like a boiler suit uniform and masks. So they put his boiler suit on the front of the stage. For the whole gig.
So has anyone seen them unmasked?
Yeah, they have now. They didn't start with, but like Corey Taylor's in a band called Stone Sour as well and does his own solo stuff. So,
on Sunday Brunch, he wasn't there in his like gimp mask?
No. Fortunately not. Can you imagine someone spitting out their tea?
I just saw a picture of there, like they say, making a souffle in his like Slipknot mask. And
so anyway,
okay.
You've heard me talk about heavy metal marketing before. And it's kind of like...
It's your LinkedIn description.
It is my LinkedIn description. And where that's come from is actually a football analogy about... someone was talking to Jurgen Klopp, the Liverpool manager, about the way Pep Guardiola's teams play.
And who's Pep who?
Pep Guardiola's the Man City manager, former Barcelona manager. So he's a very, very successful manager in football.
Right.
And he said, well, the way they play is like opera music. He said, the way my teams play is like heavy metal. Because it's all blood and thunder and heavy pressing, and the style that they call in Germany is called the Gegenpress. It's very, very like in your face, and so that's my.
We're talking about football.
We are talking about football, yeah.
So explain to me then what's in your face football playing compared to like playing like an opera playing football.
So Barcelona and Man City play like a short passing form of football where they keep the ball a lot. It's very much about. Possession-based play and where you are on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool play a form of football where they force their opponents into mistakes.
By?
Pressing really hard, so closing down the space. By always being fitter than the other team, so they play at a faster tempo.
Oh, wow. By, so you do a lot about fitness then, Jurgen Klopp?
Yeah, by being more aggressive in the tackle. By they play between the lines, so they break the rules of what traditional formations are in football.
So they don't do like 4-4, 12-7-2 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they probably, yeah.
Big team.
So the whole point is that they've engineered a new way of playing, and that's kind of what happened with heavy metal when that came out, was that they took rock music.
Who was the first heavy metal band?
The first?
Is there an official first one, or who? I mean, are we talking
I'd say
60s, aren't
you'd
we?
It'd be hard to see past Motorhead.
Motorhead late 70s, weren't they?
I think.
What about like Deep Purple and people? No, I suppose that's not heavy.
So ZZ Top as well. They've obviously been around for a long, long time.
You told me they shave their beards off now.
I didn't tell you that.
Didn't you? I'm sure someone told me that. Very depressing.
I know that the only one that hasn't got a beard surname is Beard.
We're watching Back to the Future 3 with the kids, and sort of, and obviously they're in that, and I was explaining who ZZ Top were. Totally lost on the kids, because I got to be honest, them and their friends seem to have zero interest in music and
at all.
They're just interested in like memes and 20 second clips, and now and then it'll be like, oh, there's a new song by Dua Lipa or Katy Perry, but generally speaking, no, they're not interested. I mean, obviously I couldn't name a single song in the top 10, but my kids couldn't either. And I remember being distraught when I thought how uncool my dad was when he didn't know what the number one was. And he was like, well, bloody hell, I haven't known what number one was for like how many years?
Yes.
And do you do any songs in the top 10? Is the top 10 still going?
It
must be.
It counts for streaming now as well, so it's always like all over the place. But I don't think many...
Is that a bloody car again?
Yeah. I don't think... There's been that many releases this year for obvious reasons, which I think has really made this year a funny year for music.
Who's a new heavy metal band?
A new heavy metal band?
Yeah.
What, recent or from like the last couple of years?
Well, last couple of years.
I'm too out of touch.
Yeah, God.
Avenged Sevenfold are a modern heavy metal band. I've got some of
Biffy Clyro.
Yeah.
They're Scottish, aren't they?
Yeah, they're quite metal. I mean, there'll be loads, but... Then I've got friends that are into metal, but then you get into like death metal and Viking metal, and suddenly it all gets a bit much, and I've got no interest in keeping up.
So things like, because of Corona and stuff. We used to call it the Monster Rock Festival. It's called Download now. Is that still going on?
Donington. It got cancelled this year.
Who was supposed to be playing this year?
I know System of a Down were playing. They're one of my favourite bands. That's quite cool.
Heard of them, okay.
I'm sure Kiss were playing on their farewell tour. Yeah, I'm sure they were.
God, they must be pushing it now.
I've got a funny feeling Deep Purple were playing as well.
They must be really pushing it now. Yeah. They're to like wheel them on stage.
Well, yeah. You're mean, aren't you?
they must be in there.
But then there was a spell in the 90s, like a metal revival in the 90s of new metal, which was kind of like... Korn and...
Oh, with a K.
Yeah, and Limp Bizkit and...
Oh, Fred Durst.
So, anyway...
That's on one of my running playlists, that when they did the Mission Impossible
soundtrack.
I love that song.
Now I know why you want to hate me, because Hate is all the world has even seen.
That one, then he did the Undertaker music, or the Undertaker used that song. That I've got to be honest, that's my favourite Undertaker period. I know it wasn't there with Coffins and Paul Bearer and stuff. When he came out as a motorbike, the American Badass.
Yeah.
Oh, they're him, Steve Austin, The Rock, sort of probably late 90s.
The Attitude Era.
That was... Oh, so when my kids are sort of getting into wrestling now, the women's wrestling, on WWE. And I was like, right, I'm gonna go and find a collection of old sort of Ric Flair. Because obviously they love The Rock, The Rock, but they don't know him as a wrestler, he's Rock the Actor. So I'll show you some classic Rock matches, Hulk Hogan, things like that, and I think they'd love it.
Do you know what I watched on Friday?
An old WrestleMania.
Beyond the Mat, the documentary. It's on Netflix now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Is it on Mick Foley?
It's mostly about Mick Foley and Terry Funk, yeah.
When was it made?
Late 90s. So it chronicles all of those great matches. Steve Austin's on it. A few of the other...
Young Rock.
The Rock's quite young, but it's when The Rock had just hit... So The Rock defeats Mick Foley for the world title, isn't it? In an I Quit match, if you know. This podcast is good.
I know. If anyone's tuned in to listen about marketing, I'm really sorry.
Anyway, if you are interested in marketing, Beyond the Mat is a brilliant documentary to watch, because essentially what they show is that wrestling is a soap opera, and they use the soap opera as a vehicle to sell merchandise.
So was it endorsed by WWE, this documentary?
I can't think that it would have been, but Vince McMahon's on it and Shane McMahon's on it, so they must have known. It must have been okay.
So is it quite anti then?
It's the first time they openly admit that it's kayfabe storylined, yeah. So at the end, basically, the guy sums up. He's like, he says, I've seen some horrendous things on my trip on this.
As a journalist, is it?
Yeah, but I still love wrestling.
So what... Can you give me an example without spoiling it of a horrendous thing you see?
So Jake the Snake's drug issues.
Oh God!
And the fact that he doesn't talk to his daughter anymore and stuff. Mick Foley, because Mick Foley was the champion, he invited his family to come and watch his title match against The Rock, but then they see him get really hurt, genuinely hurt, and so then he feels really guilty. So it's
Has anyone come out of it nice?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, The Rock and Steve Austin come across as really cool guys.
Thank God for that. I couldn't
have... Mick Foley comes across as an awesome guy, but he just seems to lack the empathy that his children might not want to see him get smashed over the head with a chair.
Yeah, I couldn't handle seeing, like, The Rock and Stone Cold be twats or something.
Yeah, it's that period where... Do you remember Droz? He was called Puke as well.
Yeah, he ended up being paralysed, didn't he?
Yeah, D'Lo Brown dropped him on his head.
Was it D'Lo Brown, was it?
So, it's just before that happened.
Is Droz in it then, is he?
Yeah, he's being, like, essentially interviewed by Vince McMahon, but that's when you realise that the world of wrestling is not like the normal one.
Oh, right.
So, anyway.
Right, okay. I'll watch that.
Some heavy metal subjects on this podcast today. Mm. So, there's things that heavy metal bands do that brands should take note of. And I've made some notes, and each one is a cool talking point, I think. So, number one, consistency is key. So, successful brands are brilliant at being consistent. Heavy metal fans expect to be in for a wild night of heavy rock music. Fail to deliver on that, and you're not a heavy metal band. Know your demographic and appeal to them. So that consistency of a metal band. Why? There's lots of brands out there that flip from one thing to another, where if you go and watch a Metallica show now, they still rock the stage like they would have done 20 years ago.
And you're saying you won't find them doing a ballad that will get to Christmas number one?
Basically, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
What they play... recently-ish Metallica. They headlined... Was it Glastonbury? They did Glastonbury a couple of years ago, didn't they?
Did they?
I'm sure. It wasn't their outrage, because there's always outrage.
There's outrage when Jay-Z headlined
But I'm sure some people... Metallica. And it was... I just watched them... I think... Did they open with Enter Sandman? It was just awesome. And you know what you're getting for your money, don't you?
Yeah.
And they don't let you down. Whereas sometimes... a business tries... Well, we see this a lot, don't we? A business tries to appeal to everyone. They end up with their message diluting. And that's almost all the analogies with American politics and Trump and how he got it. And they're like, rife. People know what they're getting, but when you start deviating away from that, your massive core of diehard fans, the ones that probably result in 80% of the growth of your company, the old 80-20 rule, they'll go off the boil and find somewhere who they think is now a bit more consistent.
The right fit, exactly that. And I think Metallica had that problem. So in the 90s, they obviously released a song for that Mission Impossible film as well.
Limp Bizkit.
No, Metallica released a song for it too.
Yeah, credits, yeah.
Was it called I Disappear? Yeah. And that album got hammered by their hardcore fan base because it was... considered trying to be too mainstream. And they deviated from their kind of aggressive thrash metal roots. And that you see that with brands, that they maybe panic, or they try and pander to a new audience, or they try and pander to the masses and lose that consistency of message. So who are you talking to? Who do you want to attract? You know, by definition, we're doing this podcast today because chances are some of the business owners that we'd like to work with probably have some sort of knowledge of 80s rock and metal. It's just, if they're the same age as me and you, they'll have come across that. It'll be on their radar. Where if we suddenly started trying to talk about Dua Lipa, I mean, I don't know a Dua Lipa song. So
ignore me. I'm sure we'd recognise a couple, but no, I haven't got a clue.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've got a 15-year-old cousin who listens to music I've never heard of. And when I try and engage that conversation, she just looks at me like I'm an alien. And you can do that to your customers. That lack of consistency can make your customers think, well, this isn't what I hoped it would be, or this isn't what I was buying into. And you make the mistake that just because you're providing the same service or the outcome's the same, the customer would remain happy. But
yeah, that's true. Consistency, I mean, it's probably something to talk about in every podcast, every video we do, that it's just so important. When you look at the big brands, of course they don't always get it right, but generally speaking, you know, with a Sainsbury's, a BMW, whoever it might be, you know what you're getting, you know what you expect to see, and you know what you expect to hear. And social media's made things a bit trickier sometimes, depending on who's in charge of their social. A big brand will get it wrong. We've seen this on Mental Health Day. We've seen it numerous times with Black Lives Matter, that a company can get it wrong.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, again, you know what you're buying into.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like the old Pepsi Max challenge, isn't it? I mean, the Pepsi challenge, sorry. Oh, some people like Coke, some people like Pepsi. It's like, it's just a fucking drink. And I remember this Pepsi CEO took over and she was like, you're going to like one or the other. We're not going to waste our money trying to anymore saying that we're better than the other one. You're either going to like prefer Pepsi or you're going to prefer Coke. That's fine. We're going to appeal to the people who prefer Pepsi. And that's it. And sometimes it's hard because you do want to appeal to everyone. If you think everyone's got a checkbook, I can take the money off anyone.
Yeah.
And I can understand the temptation. Because, I mean, God, we have it. You know, if a business has got the budget and their values align with ours, it's like, oh, why wouldn't we help them? But it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one you picked on there. Pepsi identified that Coke didn't have a diet offering for men. And so launched Pepsi Max. And it took Coke ages to come up with Coke Zero. Ages. Mm. Pepsi really stole a run on them with that.
Pepsi Max.
You know, that's why I picked it, because it's... that's the
Pepsi Max with cherry.
So, yeah, again, they identified to do
man fruit.
Do a flavoured diet offering before Coke did. And it's just smart.
Yeah, Coca-Cola are... is it, I could ever talk to the kids about Coke yesterday. She was saying about Father Christmas.
But not
that's
true.
That's an urban myth, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
is, not true.
Such a nice story as well.
They told me that at school. And
you believe them?
No, I knew it was wrong.
Did you say anything, or did you just get beaten if you just contradicted the teacher?
Yeah, the particular teacher that gave that, I think it was an assembly, wasn't the sort of teacher that you would contradict.
Mm.
So
I've had many of those in my day.
And funnily enough, marketing wasn't really high on his agenda either. So.
Just getting home so you could have a drink.
Well, when you grow up, you realise that, don't you? That 3/4 of your teachers are just trying to get through the day.
Yeah, well, I joke about teachers a lot, but I wouldn't do that job for love nor money. You know, the thought of working 10 till 2 does appeal, but nah.
They're all going to love that.
Hey, it's Georgia at Codebreak. Thanks for listening to the Stay Hungry podcast. If you're hungry for more, don't forget to check out all the free marketing content on codebreak.co.uk.
I've decided we do have a coffee problem. I think our mugs are too small.
Well,
that's not enough coffee now. I'm Starbucks have trained me so well now that a normal coffee
doesn't just fulfill you.
Yeah.
But the problem is that's the biggest cup that machine does.
How much boiling water could you pour in to top it up without losing too much of the
I guess flavor? You could pick on one of those extra strength ones and do that and you'd be all right. So what you're telling me is you now want one of those, you know, like the big Starbucks mugs.
Venti.
You want branded giant mugs.
Codebreak giant mugs, that'd be cool.
Yeah, they'd be a cool thing to send out as well.
Okay. Anyway, right, okay, consistency.
So consistency was our first point. Mm-hmm. Another thing that bands do really well, particularly heavy metal bands, is networking to grow. So I'm not talking about breakfast networking with a 60-second pitch. I'm talking about bands.
I can't imagine Dave Mustaine doing that. Yeah. I'd like to talk to you about Megadeth. We help bored 15-year-olds.
We make parents hate their children. Mm. Yeah. So bands book tours way in advance, even the small bands. They mix with other bands. They make new contacts. They network to get themselves exposed. So essentially the process is reach out, build, grow, reach out, build, grow. Repeat, repeat, repeat until you're the biggest band. Otherwise, on the circuit, you'll never get the traction to get to where you want to get to. A lot of businesses don't follow that cycle, so they attend a networking event. That might be, I don't just mean the breakfast stuff. I mean, it could be an expo, it could be a Zoom conference, it could be a webinar. But they go once or twice and they give up, or they don't do a great job of sharing their reputation, so they go, but their 60-second pitch doesn't tell anyone what's in it for them or whatever it might be, or they don't leave anything behind so people remember to refer them. And then they wonder why it's not doing anything for them, where metal bands don't look at it like that because they know no different. They know that they need to get to meet the agents, and it might be, you know, like the 6 degrees of separation. They might have to network for ages to get through those 6 contacts to get to the person they're trying to get to. Discuss.
Okay. I'd say the problem with that for a lot of businesses, not a lot, some businesses, shall we say, is it involves effort.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the bands that I used to love and grew up. Whether I was right or wrong, they gave the impression they worked their arse off, that they've been doing this for, you know, everyone's hurt. I remember when Sweet Child of Mine broke, and I think that was the second or third time it'd been released, but it actually like went crazy in the charts in around maybe 89, and it was off the album Appetite for Destruction that was actually released in 87. But Guns N' Roses have been going since like sort of 84, 85. They recorded Appetite in 87. They released Sweet Child of Mine, but didn't do anything, and they just grafted. And then, of course, they did break and went absolutely massive. And I'd say that not many bands put in the graft, and certainly not many businesses do. Yeah. They'll go, so to carry on the network analogy, they'll go to one expo or they'll go to two breakfast meetings. Oh, that was crap, Joel. Oh, I didn't get any business. That's a fucking waste of time.
Yeah.
And they're not prepared to put the legwork in, or they launch a business. And we see this a lot with startups now, because despite all the doom and gloom, there are still businesses opening. But they spend literally all their money on their shop front or their website or all important stuff. But when it comes down to, right, how are you going to make people come to you and convince them to part with their cash? Well, word of mouth, or my shop's on the high street, or my website's launched, they'll find me on Google, won't they? Okay, now, what are you prepared to spend to get someone to come into your shop? Or what are you prepared to spend to drive people proactively to your website? Well, I haven't got any money left.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God. And okay, let's assume you haven't got any money left then, which I wish you'd spoken to us a few months before. What graft are you prepared to put in to drive people into your shop? Are you going to, I don't know, walk around in the evenings and hand leaflets through doors in neighbourhoods where you think are your contain your kind of customer? Oh, no, I can't be doing that. It's like, well, I think we talked about it recently. I remember a solicitor setting up his own legal firm in Shrewsbury, and that's what he did in the evenings. He went around putting leaflets through people's doors, a solicitor, very highly qualified. But some people just, couldn't be asked doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, do you remember what social media used to be called when it first launched?
No, the Facebook, I know that.
Social networking.
Oh, really?
And then that's why the film's called The Social Network.
I still haven't seen that. Emma's not convinced.
Really, you'd really enjoy it. I can understand that Emma might not be as bought into it. I've just watched The Social Dilemma as well, which is a good.
Did you see Facebook's reply?
No, is it interesting?
It's posted on Facebook. Someone shared it on Saturday or Sunday, basically addressing six main points about, I don't know,
we don't
screen
do this,
time
we don't
or
do
whatever.
This.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I mean, I want to watch it. I think it'd be really interesting. But when we met up with a load of other business owners and the subject of the documentary was raised, I couldn't help but feel the overriding solution is turn your fucking phone off, limit your kids' screen time. So I'm sure that it goes to lots of depth, but it's like surely the choice and the ability to do something about it is down to us, isn't it?
Yes, but it's far. I think you're being very black and white about it.
That's me.
And it's far more nuanced than that. So, for good and for bad, and I think that's the issue, is that...
Does it address the good as well?
It doesn't, but you could apply the same tactics for a good cause as you could. So, obviously, they're aware if you haven't been... So let's talk Facebook, for example. They're aware if you haven't been on Facebook for 2 days on your phone. So, they know your phone's off. Mm-hmm. So, they will then serve you content on their audience network that encourages you back to the platform.
Okay, brilliant.
So what?
Good marketing.
Yeah, but so what the people in the documentary are arguing is that they're rather than fueling advertising, they're fueling an addiction. They're constantly putting it under your nose when you're trying to take a break from it. And I'm sure Facebook's retort is, well, no, that's not what we're doing. We've got advertisers to look after, and if we're not fulfilling our advertising requirements. So what the documentary is arguing is a child wouldn't know the difference between accessing Facebook on their phone or watching a video that's actually been hosted by Facebook and therefore serves them content linked to Facebook. And like you say, well, limit their screen time, educate them. And in fairness, on the documentary, someone talks about these same fears arised when book printing became available to the masses, when newspaper printing became available to the masses, when the telephone got invented, when radio went wild, when TV went wild. And essentially, it blows up, all this stuff happens, people realise what the risks are, governments around the world will put rules in place to say, well, you can't do that, you know, you can't be showing children toy adverts at these peak times, or you can't be showing fast food adverts at these peak times. And then restrictions catch up with the platform, and then a new platform comes out and repeat. And that was the overall message.
Okay.
So.
Do you know what bothers me most?
Go on.
People who bloody cold call my house at the evenings or weekend. That bothers me more than any retargeting.
I just wanted to speak to you.
Fucking Joel again, Emma. Jesus Christ. I haven't answered the poopers three times.
No, I know you're there.
We're getting loads at the moment.
Really?
And it's like...
You got a landline?
Clamp down on that.
Oh, you live in the sticks. You kind of have
to. Yeah, I need a landline. And it's like, oh, that bothers me. Yeah, well, I need to watch it so I can make an informed decision. Because I think there's some things are wrong. Some things are good. But... I suppose I know people who moan about Facebook, or they moan about, oh, stop fucking using it then.
So this documentary is trying to argue that you can't.
Oh, damn, I should have screenshotted it because it would have been perfect for this podcast. Someone in our family, got a bit distant, is always on Facebook. Yeah. And because every now and then I give something a like, I see his content quite often. So he posted the other day, saying about every bloody fourth post I see is Facebook trying to sell me some shit, blah, 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 blah. And then the first comment on that thread was one of his mates saying, yeah, either an ad or you trying to sell a fucking pram. And it was brilliant because all this guy does is literally sell his shit. Like, oh, I'm selling a bedspread for £3. I'm selling a pram for £100. I'm selling a bloody Star Wars figure for £6. And it's like... fuck's sake. And it's like, oh, that was brilliant. It's like, yeah, Dave, I worry less about the ads. And to be honest, the ads are more targeted to what I'm looking for anyway. And personally, I'd rather have ads that I'll be more likely to be interested in rather than ads that have no relevance to me at all. But that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So I think knowing what we know about social media and how it works, and, you know, we're fortunate to be in an informed position, the elements of where the ads work could be really, really beneficial to a company. And the beauty is that you can serve your ads to the people who are interested.
Mm.
What the documentary was trying to argue is that there's psychologists that work for Facebook or Google or Amazon or whoever that are deliberately trying to increase your screen time. Their single role is to make you be on that platform more and be more and more reliant on that platform. And at what point does that become unhealthy? But that's the same for... I remember when I was a kid, don't watch too much TV, you'll get square eyes. And It's
or like a fast food restaurant as a commercial enterprise trying to get people to eat in there more often and to order more. So does the documentary acknowledge that this has been going on? So screen time, too much screen time is bad.
Yeah.
Eating too much fast food is bad. And so there's lots of
things. It's sensationalising the fact that they've got more data about people than at any given point in history. So they are using that data to their advantage. And the reality is, unless you've got the discipline to say, I don't need to be on there right now, that they'll find a way to get at you.
Mm.
But that's, you know, we all know someone who doesn't have a TV. We all know someone who isn't on Facebook. There are ways out of it. It's just you're watching the evolution of human behaviour.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a friend of mine, he's always, when I meet up with him, complaining that his two boys spend literally all their time on their PlayStation. I said, oh, right.
Cool.
Well, no, not you. I said, oh, yeah, well, I set the limit at 3 hours for my kids. Why don't you say, oh, no, they wouldn't like that. Well, shut up then. It's like literally, all you do is moan about how much time your kids spend on PlayStation. Well, fucking put some parental limits on the screen time then.
Yeah,
very, very strange.
But you could literally, you know, nowadays, I'm pretty sure you can actually go on the PlayStation and on that user set it if you wanted to.
Yeah, so I've got different screen times for two girls.
Yeah.
So depending on who's my favourite.
It doesn't work after 3 hours.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
I mean, I worry. I worry about screen time. I worry, believe it or not, my mum and mother-in-law came round for lunch yesterday, the double whammy. And I said to the kids, right, when Nine and Grandma come... off your IMAX and leave your phones in your room. Come and sit with them because they haven't seen you all week. You know you're the light in their lives, not me.
Understandable.
And just sit and chat to them and eat crisps with them and we'll have lunch together and just leave your phones. And I had to almost like make them do that. But it was nice. And of course, as soon as they left, they were back on their phones and stuff. But I think it's sad when you see, you know, different generations sitting together and no one's talking. Or you're in a restaurant, you know, in the good old days, and you see a family who are just, I'm not saying put your phones away, but all the way through their entire meal, they're just there, each of them on their phones. That's a bit
sad. I really struggle when I see people use devices as a way to keep their child quiet.
Oh, God, don't you? Don't get me started.
Anyway, let's get back on it. So, we've done consistency, mm-hmm. we've done networking. Mm-hmm. Next one, be adaptable. Okay. So, what happens when your audience changes? In metal terms, audiences have aged. What was once acceptable is no longer acceptable. Metal shows are now more about pyrotechnics than they are about biting the head off a bat.
Is that Alice Cooper or Ozzy?
Ozzy definitely bit a head off a dove. I don't know if he bit a head off a bat as well.
It's strange, isn't it? Because when I grew up, and as a sort of teenager, you look up to your rock idols, your Axl Rose, Alice Cooper, whoever, and these bad boys are rock and roll. And then you get old and wiser, and of course the internet has given us all this information. You realise it's almost like a character. There's Alice Cooper, like, you know, messing around with bats on the stage and stuff.
He plays golf with Ronnie Corbett.
He's off on the golf course. Or I heard that guy from Slipknot the other day talking. Like I said, he was like, oh, blimey, not was I expecting at all, to my detriment. Making that assumption that they're just guys and they're doing something that they love, hopefully, and sometimes putting on a bit of a front. But what does the audience want to see? They realise, oh, actually, I mean, not showing Axl Rose on the golf course. I'm sure he's probably just drinking and doing drugs somewhere. But you get older and you realise, oh, they are just like me, and they've got older. And of course, some of the rock gods, like Slash, he's still there on stage doing his licks, brilliant. I think he's probably had to give up all the naughty stuff because of his ticker. But I think some heavy metal guys are still doing what they're doing in the 80s, but others, they've got older and...
And changed, yeah.
Changed or they're dead.
I mean, some of them are just pickled, like Ozzy. He's just pickled.
He'll outlive us all.
Because I'm not sure he counts as being alive anymore. Does he pass all the tests?
I mean, Lemmy, when he died, I mean, I'm not saying he was old, but he wasn't bloody young either.
And considering what he put himself through.
I mean, he's done everything.
So, adaptability in terms of a business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this year in particular is certainly a year where all businesses have had to adapt one way or another. I think the world has changed dramatically. And metal bands obviously have to adapt because I suspect some of them had to get more and more shocking in the 80s because there was a bit of one-upmanship going mm-hmm. on. You know, at one time it was quite shocking to throw a TV out of a hotel window. Then it really got to like biting the head off a bat or something. And then in the 90s you got people like Marilyn Manson that...
Oh, God, I've forgotten about him.
Borderline terrifying.
And he's probably a really lovely chap as well, isn't he?
He's quite like an educated guy, I think. Mm. But you know, they've adapted to their audience. So what was acceptable in the 70s and the 80s, you just couldn't get away with on stage now. So
couldn't get away with it. When people are being reported for using bad language, I think sort of like trashing hotel rooms and throwing TVs out and like...
Yeah, groupies on tour buses and stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Can you imagine that now?
So they've adapted, you know, I've seen Metallica in the late 90s. I've seen Metallica in the last 5 years. I'd say in the late 90s, it was very, in Metallica terms, it was very much about the music. It was very much about watch this guitar solo. And now, you know, there's flames and pyrotechnics and it's all about the spectacle. And that's the way it's adapted. They've kind of become like stadium bands because they're so musically talented that they're one of the few types of band now that can get away with that.
And when you say adapting, so has their audience, if I went to a Metallica gig tonight, would there be people my age and would there also be kids who are 15, 16 or no, they just don't get this kind of, that's the music my dad listens to.
No, or they manage to span I think metal's the one of the one forms that's kind of for everybody.
Mm.
But they probably got to factor in that some of their older fans now would like to sit down.
So, went to see the Stones last year at Old Trafford with Emma, and you all got some nice seats. And that, yeah, that's an important part of the buying process.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah. And if I went to a gig now, and Metallica would be probably, or Slipknot would be the kind of gig I wouldn't mind going to, I don't want to be in the mosh pit.
What do you think my number one thought is about being stood in a mosh pit or stood on the arena floor surrounded?
I can't see anything.
That'd be it, okay, because my height, okay, get a height joke in, that's all right then. Okay, let's assume I wear big shoes.
I wish Joel was here so I could sit on his shoulders.
That's a height joke again. You got one go left now. Well, what's important at my age?
What's important at your age?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't get out to the toilet.
There we go. Right, okay. Access to the toilet. So important. So when we went to see Prince, oh, God, that was a good gig. Chose seats were closest to the stage, but also near the exit so we could go. It's very important. It's there drinking at a gig, you know, back in the days where Prince was alive and I was allowed to drink. Yeah, important.
Do you know what I don't like about going to a gig? Not that you can go to a gig at the moment, but in the last few years, now I'm in my 30s, what I don't like about going to a gig.
Other people?
Other people. But when you get drinks, the first thought in your mind is, how many drinks can I get away with before I've broken the seal? So you're like, do I want to be tipsy so I let loose and enjoy it, but then I might miss some? Or shall I have less to drink so I see it all, but probably don't enjoy it as much? And that's, you can understand why people do drugs when you start to have conversations like that with yourself.
Not many bands I'm that fussed about. See, I'm glad I went to see the Stones, although again,
Prince was a very well-timed gig for you.
I never would have thought that, obviously, that was going to happen. I've got to be honest, never thought I'd get a bloody ticket. But very surprised when a mate says, oh, no, I still think there's some tickets in Birmingham. But then, of course, I think it was literally the next year he died. The Stones, I've been saying to Emma for well over a decade, right, they can't be around for very long, let's go and see them. But Keith Richards, he's another one, he's pickled, he'll outlive us all. And they were awesome. So there I was, seeing a band that my mum grew up with. My mum liked the Stones because everyone loved the Beatles when my mum was a kid, because they were the clean-cut boys and the Rolling Stones are the bad. You know, you wouldn't take a Rolling Stone home to meet your mum. And to be honest, that was one of the best pieces of marketing they did. So she deliberately liked the Stones. And then, oh God, here I am now, like 40-odd years later, going to see that band. Mad. So they've crossed the generations. And they've adapted. So in terms of technology as well, I remember the Stones, like one of the first bands to properly take advantage of the internet. You know, way ahead of some of the younger guys.
I would argue they were one of the first bands to really concentrate hard on their brand.
Yeah.
Visually, they were very consistent. The way they did their artwork, everything was very... You could look at something and go, I know that's Rolling Stones. Mm. Where you think of like Def Leppard, Deep Purple, some of the rock bands from similar-ish era. A bit all over the place to start with. Obviously, now times have changed and they all know that they have to have a strict visual.
Yeah.
But the Stones kind of set the marker for that.
Well, it's like back in those days, say if we look at the 60s, I mean, so many brands, even outside of music, maybe didn't really realise the importance of the logos, the brand identities. You know, we got Nike, who paid that graphic design student $30 or whatever. You got Virgin, that had that massively complicated drawing that was obviously then streamlined into the Virgin that we know and love now. But now, yeah, I imagine any band want to make its mark, they've probably got a full-blown marketing department.
Yeah, certainly the label has.
That
manages the brand. But adaptability, I think, if your business is unable to adapt, the risk you've got is that when the environment changes, you haven't got a business anymore. And that's whether you need to take your product offering online, that's whether you need to adjust the skill set within your business. These are the sort of things, you know, when people stopped making records and everything went on cassette, bands had to adjust because they had to change their sound because
cassettes
sounded different to LPs. And then when it went to CD, it sounded different again and they all changed their sounds again. And now we've kind of gone full circle and LPs are fashionable again, but also streaming. But the problem with streaming is it's compressed. So now a metal band has to be more loud and more aggressive than it's ever been for it to work across streaming. Mm. And you've got the same things with a business that to get seen now, in a sense, you probably have to be louder than you've ever been.
Which is uncomfortable for some. Mm. I mean, we say this all the time, but those six words that will kill any business, we've always done it this way. And there are lots of business owners out there who've always done it a certain way and it's done them well.
Yeah.
But when something changes drastically in their industry or indeed globally, like the pandemic at the moment, they're not in a very strong position.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is that burying your head in the sand like an ostrich. Remember him? The insolvency practitioner who bring like an ostrich toy along to networking. Because that's what happened. People getting into debt. But they bury their heads in the sand, and before you know it, you'd have to be declared bankrupt. And sometimes when something happens that seriously impacts your business, you have to be prepared to at least investigate the possibility of adapting.
Yeah.
And sometimes, yeah, it might be easy to walk away, close up shop, whatever. But often there is a solution, but it's like when the internet came along. Oh, no, happy with the Yellow Pages, thank you. Not up for this internet fad. And I appreciate you can't jump onto every shiny new thing, which, to be honest, is a massive temptation for entrepreneurs anyway. But there are some things you just simply can't ignore.
Yeah.
And obviously, the pandemic, you can't really ignore that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I listened to
a Gary Vee podcast this morning about how he took the wine library, his dad's wine business, online, e-commerce in 1996.
Wow, 96.
I mean, e-commerce didn't take off until the noughties in the UK. So 96 is some serious foresight.
Wish I could remember the first thing I bought online.
And how significant that must have been, how nervous you must have been.
I remember using mail order to like get books and stuff. You know, you see an ad in a newspaper, you have to call up to get something, and obviously it always took 28 days. But then now, this is terrible, I'm going to sound like a really shitty parent now. My kids, when something's ordered online, literally the next day, where is it? Can you track it, Dad? It might be tomorrow. There's a pandemic on. It could be the day after. Sometimes, of course, it is the very next day. But it's like, do you realise I had to wait 28 days? Oh, here we go. Back in the days of the dinosaur. I have to wait a month.
You do that to me all the time.
And it's like, fuck. But that instantaneous gratification. And that's something that, well, maybe not just heavy metal bands, but musician stuff. They something's released. People need it now, not driving to the shops and standing in the queue at our price or Virgin Megastore, waiting to get the LP, driving home to put the LP
HMV.
On.
HMV, what were the others? QVC?
That's a shopping channel, isn't it?
Yeah, not QVC.
So
what was the
our
one?
Our price, Virgin Megastore. I think Virgin Megastore bought our price, didn't they?
Well, Lakeland is in town now. What was that?
Oh.
That was a record shop.
Was it?
Mm.
Oh, you got me now. HMV's in one of the shopping centres, and I think that's still going.
Yeah, that's still going. There's Virgin Megastore, obviously Woolworths you go to.
John Menzies?
Yeah.
Or is it pronounced Mingus?
Don't know.
Like Danny Menzies. Who's Danny Mingus, my favourite
TV presenter. W.H. Smith, you'd get your albums from.
W.H. Smith. God, getting all nostalgic now. But I don't know whether it's just simpler times, but I do. I remember when Guns N' Roses released, I'm pretty sure they were the first band to release two double albums at the same time, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. Yep, me and my mates drove to Telford Shopping Centre, queued to get them, rushed home, and we just sat there all afternoon listening to these LPs.
That's a really strong point, is that LPs used to be a story. So you'd listen from track 1 to track 9 or track 1 to track 12.
No skipping ahead. No, could be asked to get up.
Well, yeah, one is quite difficult to skip. It, cassette or LP, it was quite difficult to skip. But two, the album was a piece of work. It wasn't the individual songs. The whole album was a piece of work. Where now, with streaming, they know they need two or three heavy hitting singles to get the attention. And then some people will listen to a whole album, but not many. And you've also got to bear in mind that most people are streaming music for free, so there's ads interrupting the journey anyway. And that's the same for businesses. Once upon a time, you'd send out a brochure and there were people out there that would read it cover to cover to figure out what you're about. Now, you've got to grab people's attention in maybe a social media post or a video or a blog. And if you don't, they're gone.
Yeah, it's it comes back to social dilemma, I guess. Such a noisy, cluttered environment. The pressure's on to stand out. And obviously, if you're a good business and you're trying to do some good stuff and help people, you know, it's almost like your duty to figure out how to cut through that. And sometimes that is getting out of your comfort zone and being loud. I don't just mean in terms of volume, but in terms of the quality of the content you're delivering. Yeah. And I guess the frequency of the content you're delivering. But there is so much shit out there. Or people want everything delivered the next day. Or they think they're so busy that they're just scrolling. And the challenge to get them to stop scrolling and to mm-hmm. click on your ad. Yeah, it's you know, for us, exciting times. You know, don't get me wrong, it is indeed a challenge. But it's like, well, okay, well, the situation's here. It ain't going away, Joel. I wish I could invent a vaccine tomorrow and make Corona go away. But that ain't going to happen. So what are we going to do about it to help our clients?
Yeah.
And unless we have those conversations, nothing. Well, things will stay the same, but they'll get worse. There's no other alternative.
Yeah, if you're standing still, you're going backwards. And that's a really horrible thing to realise, but it's true. If you're trying to keep your business in the same place, you're actually going backwards. And sometimes you just have to adapt. There's no option. And the reality is it won't be something as dramatic as coronavirus or a recession. It will be the fact that your audience has matured, or they're not using Facebook anymore, they're all on LinkedIn, or they don't consume media in the way they used to. So you've got, and loads of brands are still doing this, they're spending a fortune on TV ads without realizing that that kind of money would give them tremendous traction in other environments. And like a big one coming up is that everybody's going to start using voice a lot more heavily. Mm. So people will order their shopping on voice, they'll order takeaways on voice, they'll do their homework on voice. And so many brands are getting caught napping, in the sense that they'll all, in 5 or 6 years' time when we're all doing that, they'll all react.
Yeah.
But the ones that are doing it now, getting themselves prepared right now, are the ones that will benefit the most from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I remember when a lot of the bands I used to like, maybe apart from Queen and probably Guns N' Roses, they're pretty well known, but not hugely well known. So when they toured, it tend to be sort of smaller venues.
Yeah.
So, but when streaming came along and people basically started listening to music without having to go to the shops and buy LPs and stuff, they had no alternative but to try and sell more tour tickets and fill out better venues. And so you got bands that suddenly were having to do these big places to get the coin in. And obviously you saw that in musicians now. Well, they're still talking about it now, even, well, pre-lockdown, that I don't want to tour as much, but I've got to.
Because it's the only way to make money.
Yeah, to carry on the lifestyle I want. Selling CDs alone ain't going to do it.
Yeah.
And they had to adapt. And obviously some did, some didn't, and just gone under or just retired quietly to a little cottage in the Cotswolds, like Alice Cooper.
Playing golf.
Do you remember Stella Street? You used to watch that.
What's that?
Stella Street. It's basically a load of impressionists, like people like John Sessions, are not massive impressionists, but really good, talented ones. And there's a street called Stella Street, which is just full of famous people.
Oh,
so
really?
You'd go, like, Keith Richards ran the local corner shop, and there was, like, Michael Caine lived down at the end of the road. Oh, it was hilarious.
That sounds brilliant.
Spot on impressionists. Really, really good. I mean, John Sessions is a genius anyway. But just like David Bowie's there going down to the local corner shop to buy a pint of milk, and he's there chatting to Mick Jagger. It's just absolutely
That's
hilarious.
Cool. That's yeah, really
yeah.
Cool
so it's all
thing.
Set in, like, this...
Like a Coronation Street type street.
I think it's something like Cotswolds, kind of leafy suburban street full of these stars, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Stella Street. I wonder if some episodes must be available.
I always wonder that, you know, when like a metal star gets invited to the White House. Then they're not going to be very heavy metal that day, are they?
So. No, yeah, very, very strange. I just remember looking up to these rock gods. I got Live After Death, Iron Maiden's live album, double album, and just the inside cover, just full of this gorgeous artwork, the sleeves full of all the photos from their tour, their world tour. And I was just looking, how cool these guys are. And now that's all kind of gone. But to be honest, Iron Maiden are probably adapted, and they're not probably spending as much time or as money on stuff like that. They're spending it
digital marketing.
Yeah, basically. Right, we can't. Right, Dave, don't worry about that little Indian guy touching your foot, and don't worry about the sleeve notes either. We're not going to spend money
on
those photos. Give him a call. Do you get his card? We're going to do some digital marketing now, do some Facebook ads, don't worry about the sleeve notes. And it's like, well, fair play to
awesome.
You.
Awesome, yeah. So, my fourth point, which I'm worried about now.
God, have we done 3 points already?
We've mentioned this a few times. Be authentic.
Mm.
So people smell blood as soon as someone isn't being authentic. Studio manufactured metal bands get found out.
Mm-hmm.
The same applies to your brand. If you don't behave like your values, you'll soon lose the trust of your audience. Now, we mentioned Metallica before, trying to do something a bit more popular and getting hammered by their loyal fan base. I mean, I don't think it did that much damage, but it could have done. And then you've talked about how Alice Cooper might actually just be an act. And I think that's pretty well known. I wouldn't say...
Well, David Bowie and Iggy Stardust, so some were just more upfront about it, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. But I wouldn't say proper metalheads would choose Alice Cooper as their as their go-to gig. They would be much more interested in a Guns N' Roses or a Metallica or a Slipknot. But then even then, we've mentioned Slipknot. Now they've got older, he's kind of like, well, I've got children now. I used to have addictions. I've put them to bed.
Oh, they're all on the gear, are they?
Yeah. Serious. Like, Corey Taylor doesn't drink anymore, so...
Oh, wow, okay.
But he is still authentic to himself, but his values have had to change for him to survive. Mm. But the problem you have as a business is if you say... we want to achieve this, and then all of your actions go in another direction. A good example are businesses that say they've got a chosen charity for the year, so we do this.
Mm-hmm.
But then pans out that another charity event happens the week after, and another charity event happens the week after that, and they jump on that bandwagon, and then they jump on the next bandwagon. And it's like, so do you have a chosen charity, or is it just every time someone mentions something charity, you want to be linked to it? Because mm-hmm. one's authentic, and one is... basically just hanging off the coattails.
Yeah, I mean, what's annoying is that some businesses can get away with it, but others can't, and they don't realise that people realise.
Yeah.
They don't see it, that people are literally screenshotting going, have you seen this going on now? Because they're just not true to themselves. But I think probably a lot of businesses don't have a set of values and guidelines to follow. So if a new employee joins your company... do they know what you stand for? Because obviously you're going to have your systems and processes in place and right, this is how we do X, Y, and Z, but this is what we stand for, this is what we're about, and everything we do has to align themselves with these values. And if you've worked hard to build your tribe up, to be famous to a few, and suddenly a social media post goes out that's like, oh, well, that doesn't sound like Codebreaker, or that doesn't sound like Coke, or that doesn't sound like Morrison's, whoever it might be. It jars a bit. And when people start getting little niggles, little doubts, that can be a bit of a cascade effect. Because it doesn't take... I mean, we talk about loyalty a lot, and every business likes to think that their customers are 100% loyal diehards. Believe me.
No way.
They are loyal to themselves first. And a man or a woman might absolutely love you. I know. Say you're a hairdresser. Oh, and Sue's been coming to have her hair done to me for 30 years. Sue's loyal to me. I put up my prices every year. Sue stays loyal to me. Yeah, not ever, and I'm not saying you will, but don't ever take Sue for granted, because as soon as a hairdresser opens, maybe he's a little bit nearer, or maybe does a little bit of a discount, or ask if she'd like a tea or coffee on her visit. I don't get a tea or coffee. Or worse, I used to get a tea or coffee, but I don't anymore.
Yeah.
Then it doesn't take much for that person to shift their loyalty elsewhere, because again, they're loyal to themselves and their family first.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they realise, tea or coffee is a really good example actually in a business, if they realise the only reason you offered tea or coffee was because it looked good, and when that wasn't financially viable anymore, you stopped offering it, you've lost their trust. Mm. It's gone. Where if you offer a tea or coffee because actually it improves the experience and it makes it better for you and better for them, and everybody's got buy-in, then it's authentic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've got to be, some of it, I think to us, maybe we've been doing this a long time, is common sense. Some of it is manners. Like, I would be mortified if I found out that someone had been invited to a meeting here and they weren't offered a drink. A tea, coffee, we've got a beer fridge, we've got non-alcoholic beer, I think we've got some bubbles in the fridge, we've got fizzy drinks, we've got sugar-loaded drinks, we've got no sugar drinks, or just a glass of water. But I've been to meetings, I've been called to meetings where I haven't been offered a drink.
Yeah.
And I remember a friend of mine, I never had the balls to do it, he'd go to a meeting, if he wasn't offered a drink, he said, oh yes, tea will be lovely, please. And he'd literally say that.
Well, you've heard me say to people, oh, I'm a bit parched. Just...
Oh, yeah, it is hot, isn't it, Joel? Anyway, on to the meeting. It's like, yeah. Hang on. and it's strange, but I know there are business owners out there, and I personally know a few, who are like, oh, all costs money. Watch the pennies, the pounds look after themselves. Tea, coffee, all costs. Now,
if you're a budget supermarket, that's okay.
Yeah. Now, the person I actually have got in mind is a pretty successful financial advisor. And you, like you say, if you're a budget financial advisor, if there is such a thing, okay, fair enough. Play the chicken. That's fine. That's congruent with what you're offering. Yeah. If you're going after high net worth individuals, I can't just do a cup of coffee every time I have a meeting. It's like, bloody hell, not even a cup of instant. So again, that jars and that doesn't sit well. And if someone maybe makes them aware of that, because it could be something that person's never even considered, but when they hear it, passing conversation, oh, and I go and see my guy, oh God, yeah, he's got an espresso machine, and I always get asked about it. And in fact, when I brought my mum along for her investment, she was asked if she wanted a glass of bubbles. Wow. Suddenly it's like, oh, shit, well, go to this other bloke then.
Yeah, it's the little things. It's very often the little things.
The compound effect. That has to be, I think, in my top five business reads, because I think we mention it at least once a week.
I was going to say, I must read that book once a year.
I'm going to read it again. I'm going to listen to the Audible.
Yeah.
Does he himself record the Audible? For that,
I haven't heard the Audible.
So I don't like it when it's not the author who reads it. But I don't
unless
know
they're crap. There's a few where someone famous reads it, and I'm like, yeah, you were a good choice.
Have you had a bad one then?
Oh, some stinking ones. Oh, I'm in a book club, aren't I? So,
if you're a writer, surely you'd be a good reader.
But a lot of the business books, they're not really writers either, are they? Right.
Well, that's disappointing.
Who knew heavy metal and marketing had so much in common?
Love a bit of metal. Why don't we revisit our sort of podcast intro music then?
For some metal?
Get some sort of metal tunes in there. Because I love our current sort of Dirty Harry 70s vibe going on. Love that. Slam God is my ringtone. Need to sort that out. But yeah, maybe we could look at some metal marketing. So who'd have thought that Axl Rose and stuff could teach me about business?